If you're in the market for an engagement ring and are just completely clueless as to what kind of diamond to get or what to look for, then this is the show for you. So stay tuned.
Welcome to the Step-by-Step Wedding Prep Podcast by Wedding Connections of the Hudson Valley, the weekly show that makes wedding planning fun again. Here, you'll go from planning panic, that constant sense of feeling overwhelmed, stressed out, and needing to please those around you, to being in control again, feeling confident, encouraged, and calm in planning the day you've always dreamed of. From interviews with industry experts to firsthand planning tips and more, you'll learn ways to make wedding planning easy, affordable, and as stress-free as possible. Now here's your host, Felicia Zammit McMahon.
Hello, and welcome back to the show, where we teach you everything you need to know to plan your wedding like a pro. This is episode number 37, and every week I'm sharing with you tips and advice to make your wedding planning easier and a lot less stressful. Now, today we're continuing our topic of engagements. We are full into engagement season. And my guest today is the perfect guest to talk to you about finding the perfect diamond for your wedding jewelry. She's flipping the script on how diamonds are purchased. As a graduate gemologist and fourth generation jeweler, she's created a totally unique diamond buying experience, which is focused on the joy of buying a diamond. Now, through her business, she's taken the overwhelm and confusion out of buying fine jewelry, and her goal is to give you the opportunity to experience the incredible world of diamonds in a personal and ethical way. She is a certified 100% diamond nerd, and I'm so happy to have her on the show today. Please sit back, relax, and enjoy my conversation with Kate Zerme of Kate the Concierge.
Hi, Kate. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
Yeah, I'm really happy to have you here because we are smack dab in the middle of engagement season and proposals are happening left and right. And, you know, you are the perfect person to have on the show to talk about all things jewelry, diamonds, you know, wedding bands, engagement rings, whatever. You are the person. And I kind of wanted to jump in really quick because I know, you know, everybody's heard of the four C's when it comes to buying a diamond. But in case somebody hasn't heard of them, can you just kind of briefly describe what each one of those means?
Oh yeah, definitely. So this is a question that I get asked all the time. It's sort of the jumping off point for most of the conversations in my work life. So this is perfect, especially like you said, right now in the middle of engagement season, things are crazy. We have the holidays right now for engagement. Then we have a New Year's Eve, big engagement day, and then right up against Valentine's Day. So like we're in it. And the four C's are kind of where you need to start. So you have cut, color, clarity, and carat weight. And now let me just really quickly give you sort of like, I'm going to give you like a snapshot of each one. I think that would be really helpful. Just kind of giving you an intro. So cut is the one I always start with because it's the most important of the four C's because cut is what makes the diamond actually sparkle. And now there's a few functions of the diamond, right? We're buying it because we really love somebody and we want to show them how much we love them and commemorate an important occasion in our life or celebrate a personal milestone that's really big. And so the sparkle of a diamond really is the most apparent to your naked eye of all of its qualities. And that's sort of why we buy them, right? They sparkle and we love them for that. So from there, we go into clarity and color, which are both, they're a little bit trickier to identify when we're just talking about them in an abstract way, because all of these are graded in a laboratory environment. So when we talk about color and we talk about clarity, the important things to understand are that these are not meant to denote the value of a diamond, like a monetary value. These are meant to be ranges that we use within the industry to talk about the stones to each other. Now, that's why people get really stressed out because they see two pieces of paper that have the same letters and numbers on them and the prices are like $20,000 different and they don't know why. And it's because Specifically with cut and clarity, clarity and color, you're talking about things that are huge ranges, even though they say the same thing. So D color is a big range. SI1 clarity is a really big range. So those are hard to just pinpoint and give a spec on. The other important thing to know is that the carat weight of a diamond is the physical weight, not the size. And so 2 1 carat diamonds can be totally different physical sizes, but weigh the same amount, right? It's just like two people. Wow. You can be different heights, have the same weight and look very different.
Yeah.
So the carat weight of a diamond is exactly like that. And that's one of the, those are the snapshots of the four C's and like what makes them interesting, what makes them tick.
Wow. Oh my gosh. Well, I learned something new because I mean, I knew about the four C's, but I didn't really know in depth what each one really meant.
Yeah.
So that's really cool. And especially about the color and the clarity. Is it right to say like color and clarity means like how bright the stone is, or are you looking for like the clearness of it?
No, actually, so what you're looking for with the color is the actual internal body color of the diamond. And that's what makes this hard to relate, is that when diamonds are graded in a laboratory environment, they're flipped upside down under a specific background type, a specific light type. And then we look into the heart of the physical diamond for the area with the most color, and that's what we grade off of. Now, in real life, we then flip those diamonds right side up and stick them into a piece of jewelry where you never see that center again. So, yeah, exactly. So this is why these were created for a lab environment as a language that we in this industry can use to discuss with each other, not like every D color diamond is exactly the same. Clarity is very similar in that we grade clarity with 10 power magnification. And so when we say slightly included, it's slightly included under magnification, you still can't see it with your naked eye when you're wearing it.
Okay.
So it's really interesting how we're using the four C's now versus how they were created and what they were created for.
Yeah. Oh, that's interesting. And it's so funny, like, as you're saying that, because I keep thinking, because my husband collects baseball cards and they're graded, you know, for certain things, like, you know, are the corners bent? Is something like off center just a little bit? And I can't tell the difference. He can't tell the difference, but somehow, somewhere, somebody is seeing this under magnification and can grade it that way. So that as you're talking, I'm relating it that way. So it makes total sense to me now because I'm like putting the comparison together. So that
makes total sense.
Yeah. Now, how can somebody begin the process of figuring out what style ring their significant other wants? Like, I know that this could be like such a challenge because, you know, I shared my engagement story on the last episode and it was this whole big, plan to try to figure out what kind of ring I liked. So how can somebody start that process? Because I would imagine, you know, these aren't conversations that you're having all the time, like, oh, hey, what kind of jewelry do you like? Or, you know, what style do you like? So how does somebody go about figuring that out?
I think the first thing is to have somebody sort of on your side or in your corner who's done this hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds, thousands of times, because there's really a set of questions that we can ask and a set group of points that we can discuss that will really pinpoint what type of a style will work. Not only that somebody will enjoy wearing, but something that will fit their lifestyle. Both of those are really important factors. And so, you know, based on the style of clothing they wear, what they do for work if they work, you know, what are their hobbies? We can take all of those things into account and really make some very specific suggestions that can lead somebody to the correct design for that person. And we also take into account, you know, things like metal allergies or, I mean, we really get to run the whole spectrum of things that we have to discuss in order to get that right. I mean, hopefully when you're proposing, you know the person really, really well, so you can answer all those questions. I hope.
Yeah, right. Yeah, fingers crossed.
Yeah, fingers crossed. You know the person really well. You can answer those questions. Like, what's their favorite color? What do they do for work?
Right. Yeah, if you don't know what they do for work, that might be a red flag that maybe you should.
I mean, it might be. Yeah. I mean, if I hear I don't know on like 9 of the 10 questions, I'm like, maybe we should have some conversations before we propose.
Yeah, exactly. Come see me in 6 months.
Right? Exactly.
But you make some really good points, you know, about, you know, what their profession is, because that would, I would think that would determine the height of the ring as well. Because, you know, if you're like a nurse or an artist or something like that, where your ring is gonna, you know, might get caught in a lot of different things, maybe you want like a lower setting. Or, you know, like you said, if you have metal allergies, that's going to be a huge factor in what type of metal, you know, you have in that ring, because, you know, you don't want to spend all this money on a ring and then have them not be able to wear it because they break out in a rash or something like that. So you really want to make sure that you know that for sure before going into the process. Now, if somebody were to get a custom ring, you know, that's sort of, you know, a lot of people like to do the custom ring. They like to make something very specific for their significant other. So if somebody were to get a custom ring, how far in advance would they need to reach out to their jeweler to get that made? Like how what is that process like, and how long does the process take?
I think that totally depends on the person looking for the ring. We can move very, very quickly on our end, but a lot of times there's a lot of emotion that goes into this type of a purchase. And a lot of time that emotion, it makes concrete decision making really difficult. So it makes saying like, oh yeah, this is the ring, let's go, let's produce it. It makes it kind of hard sometimes for people emotionally to kind of take that step. And so we find that actually, on our end, the process, like I said, it's pretty quick. It's streamlined. We work really hard to make it that way, a really easy, effortless process. And it seems that on the other end, that emotional, leap is what needs to happen for this ring to be made. So how the process typically works is when someone contacts me, we'll discuss the timing first. That's generally the majority of the budget. And so we want to sort of nail that down before we start talking about a setting or a mounting, as we call it. And from there, we'll come up with ideas. I'll ask those questions about the style, and we'll sort of figure out the style we're going for. I'll ask for pictures of inspiration for things that maybe their significant other would like. And then we'll come up with a design in the computer that someone can look at. From there, we 3D print that design in real size so that they can physically hold a model. And these things are all done by distance now. So I mail the models back and forth to you. I have one, you have one, and we chat like over Zoom. And then we can make any changes you need in the computer, reprint, and we can kind of go back and forth like that, I guess as many times as we need to. Sometimes it happens once and, you know, the ring is done in 3 weeks, start to finish from when I had my first conversation. Sometimes that takes, you know, 12 weeks. Sometimes it takes much longer. It really depends on when and how the client wants to have it all happen.
Yeah. And that's interesting. So from the back end, it's a pretty quick turnaround to actually like make the ring.
Yeah.
It's interesting that you say like it takes a lot in the beginning to really commit to this purchase.
Yeah.
And then commit to the design, because this is something that the other person is going to have for a lifetime. So, you know, I could see why they're, you know, it's not, I wouldn't say it's like hesitation, but it's more like they just want to make sure they get it right, you know, and make sure every detail is perfect. So that's really interesting. So yeah, so I could see how sometimes it could just take a couple of weeks and sometimes it could take a couple of months.
Exactly.
So, yeah. Yeah. That's awesome. Now let's say somebody already has a ring. They've already been proposed to, they have their ring. What are some things that you could do every day to protect your diamond ring, whether it's your engagement ring or, you know, your wedding band? What are some things that you could do? And I know that I am at fault on a lot of these things because you told me about this a long time ago and I still make the same mistake. So I know I don't follow the rules. So can you tell people like what some of the rules are?
Yes, absolutely. Okay. So when you have a custom ring made, you have a piece of fine jewelry. It's sort of like fine art. And that's sort of how you need to treat it, because these aren't There's nothing in your life that you purchase one time and then never do any maintenance on, never take care of, use it every single day and expect it to last forever. Mm-hmm. So you can't think of your fine jewelry that way either. So you really need to be cognizant of the limitations of these pieces of fine art in that you really shouldn't sleep in them. You shouldn't be wearing them when you're making meatballs. You should never, ever, ever under any circumstances wear your fine jewelry to the gym ever. I could say that 42,000 more times in my life.
Yeah,
exactly. So there's a lot of things that you shouldn't do. So the rule of thumb with your fine jewelry is that it should be the last thing that you put on before you leave the house and the first thing you take off when you get home. So these pieces aren't meant to be really, they're meant to be worn every single day, but they're not meant to be abused with no maintenance. I would always recommend that you have somebody look at your ring at least every 6 months. I mean, I certainly look at my own a lot more frequently than that just because I do wear my jewelry a lot. So I know what the wear and tear looks like. And it really can be anything. It can be anything it's a personal thing, I guess is the best way to put it. So for each person, depending on your job. So if you're somebody who does a lot of filing, then, you know, pulling that drawer in and out is going to get you. If you're a nurse, then it's pulling the gloves on and off. If, you know, so depending on what your job is, what your lifestyle is, it could be any small thing that you're doing repeatedly day in and day out with your ring on that's actually causing the damage. And so having a professional look at it, they can sort of assess the situation, see how long you've had the ring, what it looks like right now, and kind of give you a maintenance plan moving forward to help you take care of this jewelry so that you can wear it forever.
Wow. Yeah, as you're like saying all those things, I'm like, yeah, I do that. Like, I am a rule breaker on everything. And it's so hard because I just remember, you know, in my family, you know, like my mom, my grandparents, like they had the rings on their finger and they never took them off. And, you know, and so I kind of grew up with that. But then like, as you're talking, I'm like, no, what you're saying makes complete sense because you're doing things, you know, like you said, it's a piece of art and somebody, you know, spent a lot of time creating this and coming up with the design and, you know, it's a big investment. So you want to make sure that you take care of it. And I remember, I mean, I always take my rings off when I make meatballs. I always do that because that's just gross because, you know, I don't want like raw meat under there. Like, ugh, gross.
The person who ends up cleaning it, I appreciate that.
Yeah. But I remember one time I was painting and I didn't take my ring off and I got some paint on my ring and I was like, oh my God, I started freaking out and it was like underneath. I mean, it was hard to even get out. And I'm like, oh no, like that was a lesson learned the hard way. I got it out. It's all fine now. But I was like, yeah, no, I'm not doing that again ever. And even like when I put lotion on, you know, I take my rings off before I put lotion on. And, you know, I was kind of curious because now we're in the age of hand sanitizing all the time. Should we be taking our rings off before we put the alcohol-based sanitizer on? Like, does that affect?
I mean, yes, all of that stuff is horrible for your jewelry. Mm-hmm. We're seeing a lot of degradation in terms of if you have a white gold ring, the rhodium plating is wearing off significantly faster than it ever did before. We're also seeing, you know, some pitting in some metals. We're seeing some weakening in some metals. Like, it's definitely not a great time to be wearing your jewelry all the time with the hand sanitizer situation. Yeah. Yeah, we're definitely seeing a lot more wear and tear. So I think the repair shop will be very busy as this continues because unfortunately it is having a very negative impact on all of our good jewelry.
Yeah. So basically the rule of thumb is if you do anything to your hand, don't have your ring on.
Exactly. Yeah, that's pretty much the rule of thumb. And I know that sounds crazy. People are like, well, I'm going to lose it. Well, you have to pick a specific spot to put it. Mm-hmm. But, you know, there's just, if you want to take care of it and you want to be able to wear it forever, a lot of these pieces of jewelry, especially the ones that I know that I make for my clients and with my clients, they're meant to be passed down for generations, but that requires you to take care of them. Mm-hmm. And if you do take care of them, then you can pass them down. If you don't take care of them, then unfortunately 20, 25 years, I know it's still a long time for anything to last. It won't be repairable at some point. If maintenance hasn't been done along the way.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's something to really think about, because like we said, you know, this is an investment. This is probably one of the most meaningful gifts you're ever going to receive. And you want to make sure that you take care of it for sure.
Mm-hmm.
So before we end the show, you know, I kind of wanted to turn it back to you to make sure, you know, did we cover everything? Is there something that you want to talk about that we maybe didn't cover? I know one thing popped into my head that that we didn't discuss, but kind of ties back to our last question about, you know, taking care of your ring. Also make sure that you get your ring and all your jewelry insured, just in case something happens.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, that's always a smart move. And there's a couple of different ways that you can do that. You can add a rider to your homeowner's insurance, which is always an option. And then you can also insure through an independent company that only insures jewelry. I'm always happy to help anybody with that. Now, in order to insure your jewelry, you do need an appraisal. When you purchase your ring, it should have come with an insurance appraisal. An insurance appraisal is just, it's replacement value. So it's just meant to replace the piece of jewelry, God forbid it is lost or stolen. So generally an insurance replacement value is what you paid for the piece, because that's how much it would cost you to purchase it again. This makes sense, right?
Yeah.
At the beginning, as time goes on and prices change, that can change too. So you probably want to contact where we got your ring and make sure that you have an updated appraisal. Generally, they will provide that service if it's their piece of jewelry for free. Otherwise, appraisals can be fairly costly. And you just submit that to your insurance company. I always recommend making sure that you update your appraisal with your insurance company at least every few years. And again, wherever you got your ring should provide that service for no charge. I know that's pretty standard within the independent jeweler world and private jewelers like myself. I don't know about sort of the major, larger chain retailers and what their policies are.
But that's really good advice. To definitely like get it appraised, because, you know, just like a house, you know, the value changes over time. So that's definitely a good point to, to know.
It's important to know.
Yes, definitely. So yeah, I mean, was there anything that we didn't discuss that you wanted to discuss?
I think what I always try to tell everybody is that while this is a big purchase, it's a significant purchase, it's really about having fun and buying your diamond, buying your ring, having those made and chosen for you, selected for you. It should be fun. And that's really what it's all about. I know, you know, in 2020, everything is so unbelievably stressful in every aspect of our lives. And this shouldn't be one of those things. It really shouldn't. So if at any point you're feeling that stress or feeling overwhelmed, like the process doesn't need to be like that. How about that? Buying a diamond should be fun. That is what I always tell everybody. If you're not having fun, then something's got to change, because diamonds are amazing and magical and wonderful, and you're purchasing it for an amazing, magical, and wonderful reason.
Yeah.
And so like those two things need to be in line. So I guess that's what I always try to leave everybody with.
Yeah. And that's really good advice, because I mean, obviously, like, you know, if you're around a fine jewelry all the time and, you know, choosing a diamond ring, like, to me, that just seems like so much fun, just in and of itself, like just thinking about it. So to actually like be in the process of creating something, like you said, like if it's not fun, you know, then maybe look somewhere else.
Yeah. It needs to be fun. This is fun.
Right. Yeah. Try a different type of ring or something.
Yeah.
But yeah, this is, it just sounds like a lot of fun. So before I let you go, I'm going to do what I do with all my guests, which is the fun five questions. And it's sort of a get to know you type of deal where our listeners can learn a little bit more about you. So my first question to you is, I know personally that you are a fourth generation gemologist. You come from a long line of jewelers. So can you tell me a little bit about your family history and how you got into the business?
Absolutely. Yeah. So I'm a fourth generation jeweler. I'm a graduate gemologist. That is my technical, I guess, industry designation. And I come from a whole family that does the same thing, which is amazing. So I sort of grew up in it. And I guess the best way to think about it is if you grew up on a farm, right? And you worked with animals every single day as part of your life. And then you went to veterinary school. Right? You're going to sort of live your life in reverse, because you're going to gain all of this practical knowledge and experience, right, as this huge foundation, and then you're going to layer on a layer of book knowledge. But while you're receiving that book knowledge, you're going to be able to know which parts of it are really important and which parts aren't. Versus if you kind of go at that in reverse and you start your journey to be a veterinarian at the college level, you learn all of your book information, and then you need to take 20 years to apply all that practical knowledge. Mm-hmm. So growing up in a family, my family owns J. Mark Jewelers in Cold Spring, New York, and growing up in a family working in a workshop in a factory environment on a daily basis, in creating fine jewelry pieces gave me this lifetime of experience before I even touched the books. So it allowed me to come out of the graduate gemologist course in just like hitting the ground running in all the nuances and all the small things. And it's really been an incredible journey. And I'm so grateful that this is what my family has always done so that I have this base of knowledge. And I'm excited to pass that on to my kids too.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really cool. I mean, and I would think, I mean, I don't know, this is just like me, you know, overanalyzing, but I would think that once you had all that like experience before you even hit the books, were your tests easy or were they still hard?
Some of them were easy and some of them were hard. A lot of the book work for the graduate gemologist is actually lab work. You're working in a laboratory. So, I mean, that's always going to be different, especially if you've already done it in a much more informal setting and now you're doing it in a formal setting and they're like, fill out this piece of paper this way after you look in the microscope. And I'm like, dude, like, I know I'm never going to have to fill that piece of paper out again. So some of it was just retraining myself to do things the way they wanted them done before I could take the test.
Awesome. Now, what's even cooler is that not only do you come from this long lineage of jewelers, but you are a diamond concierge, which is just like the most amazing title I think anybody could ever have. So can you tell me what a diamond concierge is and what you do?
Absolutely. So, I mean, as I mentioned before, I think that buying a diamond and buying rings and fine jewelry should be fun, like just straight up fun. I am all about, like, as a person, I am shimmying and sparkles and energy, and that's just who I am. And so I am so excited about diamonds and helping people find the right one that I made a career out of it. So my company is Kate the Concierge, and I'm a diamond concierge. So I work with clients one-on-one to find them the absolute perfect diamond. I do everything from educate them to find the right stones for them, source them all wherever they need to come from, whether it's New York City or Antwerp, Belgium, no matter what the request is, how specific the client is or how vague the client is. I mean, I really soup to nuts take care of everything so that all you have to do as the client is look at sparkly diamonds and have fun. Wow. And so I sort of, I really want this process for everybody to be as amazing as I know it can be. And so I offer my services one-on-one. And right now I'm doing a digital diamond concierge service. Pre-pandemic, you could also join me in the Diamond District to do the same thing. But right now it's digital, so it's over Zoom. And I work with clients all over the country and in different countries as well. So it's a lot of fun all the time.
Oh my gosh, that sounds amazing. And it's so interesting because I would have never thought, I mean, I know of the Diamond District in New York City, but I would have never thought of Antwerp as, you know, the equivalent.
It is. Well, it's actually a lot bigger.
Yeah.
80 something percent of the world's diamonds are faceted in Antwerp, Belgium. So most of them come from the mines to Antwerp, get faceted and go back out to the world. So by going to Antwerp directly, we can source just a huge, huge number of stones and see. So if you want to see a 1-carat diamond, then, you know, we could look at 100 and however many 1-carat diamonds you want to look at. So it gives us that opportunity too, once we can travel again. And I make it a week-long extravaganza and we travel together and we stay in amazing hotels and do amazing things. And
oh my gosh. Wow. That is like, that's just luxurious to me. That just sounds so amazing. That's awesome. Now, you're a mom, you're an entrepreneur, you're wearing many, many hats. What advice do you have for someone who might be listening who is also wearing many hats and juggling many things? Like, what advice do you have for them?
Oh my gosh. I guess I would say give yourself some grace because nobody has it all together ever, no matter what they say or what their pictures look like on the internet. Nobody has it all together. I am like a real life mom. My kids are amazing and precocious and adventurous. And so I just try to foster that spirit in them, which gives them great independence, which I love. Also a little scary. And you know, you just, the laundry will never all be done. The dishes will never all be clean. And you know, you just, I love what I do for my work and that makes me really, really happy. So I definitely try to prioritize myself and my work as well as my kids and my family and my home. And it is just a big balancing act. And sometimes all the balls fall when I'm juggling. Yeah. Sometimes I manage to keep them all in the air.
Yeah. And I love what you say, like, you know, to give yourself grace because, you know, when you look on Instagram or social media, I mean, that's really like the highlight reel. Like nobody, you know, that's just like the best of the best. Nobody wants to show, you know, you know, what goes wrong. Everybody wants to show what goes right. So definitely give yourself grace, you know, with that. I love that. So we're in the holiday season now, as well as engagement season. So what is one of your favorite holiday traditions?
Ooh, that's a good question. So you mentioned that I'm a fourth generation jeweler. So that means that I have grown up in a retail background. And if you've ever worked in retail at the holidays, you may know what that looks like. It's like every day is the Super Bowl for a month in a row. So holiday traditions for us are just around spending time as a family together, making that quality time. My husband really does a lot of that stuff with the kids. And so I am in charge of no part of it. I'm in charge of none of it. You asked how I did it all. Well, that's the part that I'm not in charge of that. I'm not in charge of it. I swear. Oh, I wrap all the gifts.
Oh, there you go. Well, that's important.
You know, that's important. Other than that, I don't know. He hangs all the lights. He decorates the tree.
That's awesome. It kind of sounds like my husband too. He's definitely like more into the holiday spirit than I am. Like I love the holidays, but he loves the holidays. So, I mean, if it were up to me, our tree would be up the day after Halloween. So
love that.
So I can relate, I'm sure. Now, my last question for you is, I know you're the mom of twins and what was the last game that you played together?
That is a really good question. Well, they're really into Beyblades right now.
Oh yeah.
I don't, those little spinny top things. And so we're forever like having, I guess they have Beyblade battles. I don't know. And so they're forever making me spin the little tops. So that seems super fun. They're like super into it. So they get really excited when I participate in the Beyblades and they just got like two new ones or something. I don't know. But I pull the little string thing that makes them spin and they get super happy that I'm involved. So I do that with them. And then currently, every winter I let them take my entire vegetable garden and they're allowed to do whatever they want with that space of land.
Oh, nice.
And so this year they've created an archaeological dig site.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So it's a lot of fun, but I daily get to go and check out the archaeological dig that's happening. I think the hole is currently around 4 feet deep.
Oh my God.
And they like to hide things in. And then, so last year they hid a bunch of Matchbox cars and all sorts of other things. And so now they're re-digging them up and they clean them all. And then they set up like a little exhibit. So we're very involved in that right now.
Oh my gosh. Oh, that's so cool. Wow. I could just picture like, you know, years and years from now, like if somebody else buys your house and they're like digging in the backyard, they're like, what is this? You're going to find all your kids' stuff back there. Like
that's exactly what's going to happen. That's exactly what's going to be. And I hope it brings them so much joy because it certainly brings us so much joy. I mean, every season when I'm gardening, I find all of the things and I'm like, oh, look at this. This is so cool.
That's awesome. Very cool. Well, Kate, I thank you so much for taking part of your day to be with me. I know this is a very busy time for you. So I thank you so much for joining me today. So before I let you go, where can people find out more about Kate the Concierge?
Well, the best way to reach me is either directly through my website, which is katetheconcierge.com. And you can just go right to experiences and then Digital Diamond Concierge. That's the most popular one. It's so much fun. You get to hang out with me on Zoom. Otherwise, you can shoot me any kind of informal messages right through my Instagram page, which is also Kate the Concierge. I'm also Kate the Concierge on Facebook. I answer all of those messages. I answer every single one. So feel free to ask me any questions. Shoot me stuff that you need, you know, whatever you need. I'm always here for you when it comes to this. And I'm really excited to start working with you. And yeah, so much fun.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Well, now like I want to build a custom ring because it sounds like, right? So fun. Like I want to do this whole thing. Like it sounds amazing. So I just want to thank you again so much for being here. Happy holidays, happy new year. And thanks again. We'll talk soon.
We'll talk soon. Thank you.
So there you have it. Everything you need to know to find the perfect diamond for that oh so special engagement ring. Now, if you've enjoyed this show, I would love for you to share it with somebody who you know could really benefit hearing from it. And if this show is one that's been really truly helping you, I'd love for you to subscribe, leave a review, and share it with your friends. As always, you could join the conversation on Instagram. We're at WedConnectHV. And if you're a Hudson Valley bride or groom, you could join us on WeddingConnectionsHV.com for all your Hudson Valley wedding inspiration. So until next time, happy planning.